This is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Catherine Cruz. Joining us in studio today are Honolulu Police Department Deputy Chief John McCarthy, Carl Berquist, the Executive Director of Drug Policy Forum of Hawaii, and Christopher Garth, the Executive Director of the Hawaii Dispensary Alliance. Welcome to you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks
so much
for
being here. You know, Carl, why don't we start out? You're tracking all these bills. What's the snapshot as we speak?
Well, on the subject of adult use cannabis, there have been kind of two parallel tracks moving. One has been for a legalization of adult use cannabis. There was a bill in the Senate that received a hearing, as you said in your intro, for the first time. It actually passed out of that committee, out of the Senate Judiciary Committee. It was then amended a little bit, and it was referred to the Department of Health for regulation. Then it was re-referred to that committee, and it never got a second hearing. And to that, I would say that adult use cannabis in other states is never regulated by the Department of Health. So that was kind of just the start of the conversation. So that was kind of expected at this stage. And I think regarding adult use cannabis, what we're going to see probably is some kind of working group, a task force through a resolution. Then we'll continue that discussion, you know, through the summer and next fall or this fall. On decriminalization, there is a bill that is going to be voted upon today on the House floor, HB 1383. And the latest amendments that I saw on Tuesday were for 3 grams, so that's 1/10 of an ounce roughly, and a $200 fine for that amount. And you could be caught with that any number of times. It's not a first, second, or third thing. But I would say that amount, 3 grams, is very, very low. Most other states have half an ounce, and fines of $50 to $100. So again, I think once this crosses over from the House to the Senate, we're going to continue that conversation to see if we can change that bill from our perspective.
And do you think we're going to get anything this session? What are your, I don't know if you could bet on this. I don't know.
No, I think you know, based on the votes and the mood, and as you said in the intro, the Democratic Party, which controls the legislature, decriminalization, some form, hopefully better than the current version of the bill, will hopefully pass, and then some kind of conversation starter on adult use through a task force, which we hope to be on alongside with the Hawaii Dispensary Alliance and the Honolulu Police Department and all the other stakeholders.
And Chief, what's your take on this bill?
You know, we're going to enforce the law no matter what it comes out. And the problem we're taking the stance, it's not so much law enforcement, but we're looking at the unintended consequences that come along. The wholesale legalization or even decriminalization without any kind of rules or any studies, we just feel is totally irresponsible. Several states have already legalized it. There's lessons to be learned. There are multitude of problems with just legalizing it with no holds barred that the public would suffer from. And that's the stance and the position that we're coming from.
I just recalled at the start of the session we had that terrible crash in Kaka'ako where we had a driver who was believed to have been drunk and he plowed into a crowd of people and killed, you know, three people, innocent bystanders. And I know the concern was, well, gee, you know, we've got all these different departments, DOT, the city, saying we've got to make the streets safer, and that, you know, as far as actually allowing another drug on the streets, right? I mean, that people were saying, yeah, that doesn't make sense.
Good point. I mean, there's no measurement for the THC level like alcohol. We know that 0.05 impairs you and this sort of thing. A lot of the studies indicate that different people metabolize marijuana in different ways, and how marijuana is ingested also is a consideration. What we do know is Colorado, for example, since the legalization of marijuana, has seen 150% total increase in impaired driving fatalities and injuries. Washington State has seen an exponential rise of 15% a year since the legalization. So it does create more problems. What we see on our end is we normally see marijuana mixed with other drugs. When we do see the testing performed, and that's usually, unfortunately, on fatalities. I know the doctors are looking to get a broader spectrum on the testing, but that in itself poses a lot of problems. So, yeah, putting another drug out there, you're making it more available. You're going to see an increase. You're going to see, the unintended consequences that come along with it. And we have no way of, you know, taking any sort of action or any kind of sort of control.
Thank you for that, Chief. I would just say that, first of all, in terms of actually legalizing cannabis, as other states have done, there is no direct causation proven with any of these increases that the chief mentioned. For example, in Colorado, they actually weren't measuring this before legalization, so that kind of skews that data. But the chief is absolutely right to be concerned about this kind of thing. In fact, we should be concerned right now. Right now, cannabis is widely available, and it is not regulated. And there's a strong incentive for the people who are currently producing cannabis for the black market to make it strong, to make a lot of money on it, to have it in small amounts. The stronger it is, the smaller amount you can get out into the market. So a lot of people out there may already be consuming unregulated cannabis and driving and mixing. So, you know, one of the strongest arguments for regulation is that you start to get that under control to a certain degree. So that's kind of what, you know, one of the things that we think that regulation would begin to control. Would it eliminate the problem of impaired driving and the other issues we're going to talk about? Absolutely not. But we would have to have public education campaigns, which have been successful when it comes to alcohol, for example. So yeah. That's kind of the main thing that, you know, regulation, safer products, then public education.
I just think just the climate, though, having this terrible accident and then this big push to keep everybody safer, whether they're walking or driving or biking, you know, folks were saying this doesn't have a chance this session because why would they do that, add, you know, another drug into the mix?
There is, sorry, really, really fast. Mm-hmm. The Congress has actually had a law, an act introduced called the Marijuana, the Marijuana Data Collections Act. That's what it is. And to study the effects of the legalization of marijuana, it's there. What we're saying basically is study it. Let's if we're going to legalize it, at least legalize it properly. Don't just go off and irresponsibly pass a law. Because one of the ironies is they're trying to make Hawaii smoke-free, tobacco-free. There's a bill that actually outlaws or makes the minimum age for tobacco 100 years old in several years from now. But we're going to allow people to smoke marijuana. And, you know, smoking is bad for you no matter what you smoke. Vaping is bad for you. That's all medically proven. So it's kind of the irony of it all. We're going to do this and think we're doing it right. We're not.
Right. There are all kinds of bills out there that are great that are also ridiculous. The one speaking to tobacco, one of the ones on the ridiculous side of the spectrum, that didn't get a hearing, that didn't make it out of committee. The one for adult use and legalization certainly did, showing that there's actual merit behind that. Did anyone actually think that's involved in the legalization push? Did we think that it was going to pass this year? No. We knew that it wasn't. Getting a hearing, getting it out of committee was great. That was a great gesture. It shows momentum, and it shows that there is a foot forward and a path that's starting to develop. Will it happen in the next couple of years? Maybe, but I think that cannabis will be legalized on the national front before it is in Hawaii. Chief, you and I were discussing all of the problems that are going on right now in Honolulu specifically. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of other issues that we need to tackle, that the ledge needs to tackle before legalization is even at the forefront of those considerations. That being said, there's a lot of room for more studies, greater articulation of what the laws should be and how they should be developed to get us to that point. Mm-hmm. Medical cannabis has been a success in one degree or another. We have a long way to go, but decriminalization is certainly a step in the right direction. And as Carl pointed out, hopefully by the end of this session, we'll have common sense measures that encourage the investigation, the safe promotion, the safe availability of decriminalized and somewhat legalized cannabis in one fashion or another.
Sure. I just wanted to take a step back so we know what we're discussing. We're discussing something that is the result of prohibition, and that prohibition is rooted originally in racism. The fact that cannabis was prohibited in the first place was an attempt by the federal government, especially Harry Anslinger, to go after certain communities. And then you have that being amped up under President Nixon as well. So, you know, the prohibition has a nefarious origin. I understand the public health concerns, but the current disparate impact of the cannabis arrests nationwide they're well known, and they happen here as well. We have Filipino youth, Native Hawaiian youth, especially on the neighbor islands, being arrested disproportionately compared to white youth, even though they use at the same rate. So we have a lot of problems with prohibition, including the impaired driving issue that we discussed earlier. It's a problem of prohibition that we can't regulate, that we can't address this. I think, you know, the chief's point about smoking is an excellent one. half of sales in Colorado, the first state to legalize, are of edibles. So we're getting away from smoking. And that's going to be really important in Hawaii because of our very progressive anti-smoking legislation, because of our huge tourist industry. We just opened up the medical cannabis system yesterday to tourists who have medical cannabis cards, yet they cannot purchase edibles at the dispensary. So these are things that we have to discuss. We do have to discuss them. We should be grateful to the states like Colorado and Washington that took that first step. Did they make some mistakes? For sure. Now we have the country of Canada doing it on a nationwide basis. That could be a very interesting model. You know, as Chris said, we may be going down that route here. And we'll probably talk about the black market later. One of the issues there is that, of course, it's illegal in other states. So you're seeing production in states like Colorado being exported to other states. Here in Hawaii, because we're an island chain, we're going to face a situation maybe more like Canada. We're going to be a unit of its own. So we're going to have a unique opportunity to create a good regulated system. Kind of like the chief said, we need to study it and discuss what's the best for Hawaii.
You know, I just want to say something. We don't go out and arrest people because of their color or their work ethic, or we just don't do that. And marijuana is not a big emphasis for us, period. A lot of the marijuana arrests we get are actually in conjunction or related to another arrest that the person, you know, we find something on them, and you've got to arrest them. You can't just dispose of it. But one other thing you brought up, the edibles, raises a lot of interesting issues, because now the method of ingestion, you're ingesting it and it's absorbed into your system through the liver. It takes 1 to 3 hours, you know, and again, it's not regulated. It's not like a doctor giving you a prescription where we know what's going on. You've got to worry about this person's, not only his metabolic rate, but are they taking other types of medication? Are they taking over-the-counter medication? It's almost like self-medicating in a sense. And now, you know, we're already seeing a rise in those states with emergency room visits because of marijuana-related things. Again, the edibles creates that problem once again. So right. That's an interesting point.
So going back to the emergency room rates, now that it's acceptable, now that it's legal in those states, parents and other people who may have imbibed cannabis don't face criminal charges for announcing that, hey, yes, I took too much cannabis, whereas before it was stomachache or food poisoning. So you see those rates rise because it's legitimate, because it's okay. But as Carl was saying, greater regulation allows the law enforcement, it allows the consumer to understand exactly how much they've taken. Even if they go to the hospital in the worst case event, they know, I took X number of milligrams of THC. Well, the hospital can provide you with whatever dosage of CBD they need to combat that. So with greater regulation comes greater safety. It seems like we're talking about the same thing, just from different angles.
Yeah, and I think that patients and sellers of adult use cannabis, of medical cannabis, when it's available in the edible form, have a lot of responsibility to educate the community about how this is a convenient drug when we cannot consume this medicine or in public. Edibles is a good option for people who are sick or possibly for adult use in the future. Yet, as the chief said, it enters the system in a different way. There's a time lapse before it, so people might take a little too much. So that's why there are big public education campaigns in the legalization states like Alaska that address this issue head on, and you know they're monitoring that closely.
Let's hear from the public. You know, the Hawaii Cannabis Expo kicked off at the Blaisdell Exhibition Hall last month. It was the fourth time it was held. Dylan Bell is an Oregon resident who was at that expo on behalf of a local company, Smokey's Pipe and Coffee, which was located near the University of Hawaii. Let's take a listen.
I think it's all go, honestly. Like, you guys are just a little bit behind here. We are making so much extra money for our schools, for our roads. Everybody seems to be making a lot off of this. It's helping a lot of people out. A lot of addicts get off of other drugs and be able to use something respectfully and responsibly, not get hurt, not be too much. So it's really kind of time for it, you guys. Like, everybody needs it.
And Mara Gordon is the founder of Aunt Zelda's, which produces cannabis products, and who has long been on the national medical cannabis scene.
My only concern on recreational at all is I've witnessed when states pass for regulations for recreational, a lot of times the medical side suffers because everybody jumps on the bandwagon to start creating recreational products. And the reality is, if you run the numbers, which of course I'm a numbers person, I'm an engineer, when I run the numbers, the recreational market, people that are using it recreationally are already using it. So all you're really doing is cutting the pie into more pieces with a new product. Medical, everybody has an endocannabinoid system.
And Lionel Wright is a Papakolea resident who weighed in on the issue.
Everything in Hawaii takes at least 2 years. And to be honest with you, the only way it would be done earlier than 2 years within would be if they needed the money for the rail. And that would be the biggest thing. Because can they fund the rail with the cannabis money? Yes, and then some. You know, is it right? No, it's not right. It's not right for Hawaii. It's not right for our people. That money could be used in so many other ways.
Want to chime in here?
Yeah, sure. I just on the
we're all shaking our heads in here.
The tax revenue issue is it's an important one to address. It's certainly a benefit in terms of that millions and millions would come in, but we would have costs. Of course, we would have to do the public education campaigns, etc. It certainly is not in the numbers that it could fund the rail. I think estimates extrapolated based on Colorado and other places that we could get 80 to 100 million per year. And, you know, put that in perspective, there was an appropriations bill this session for drug treatment that had $1 million for three different programs in it. It could fund a lot of different things like that if the legislature so wants. But, of course, it's not a panacea. And then there would be other costs for public education and such. But it's still, right now, the sum is zero, and we're enforcing the law at a cost. So,
you know, that raises two points. It's kind of interesting because one is, you know, everybody talks about the tax. It's anecdotal. It's some of this, again, goes back to what I say, study, because in I think it's Tennessee or Kentucky, they're actually spending $4.53 for every dollar that they're bringing in to combat the social problems, the emergency room visits, the enforcement, the regulation, and all these other things. So it's actually not a positive to the economy. So it doesn't make sense in that respect.
Is that with respect to the opioid
marijuana, cannabis? Just marijuana, just cannabis.
Well, those are, I mean, Kentucky and Tennessee are states that don't have adult use legalization. So the tax rates for medical are going to be much lower. They are in every state. And, you know, to the speaker's point previously about the medical program being impacted, we're certainly against that. And that's something that we could learn from other states, how to ensure that Hawaii is one of the pioneers in the medical cannabis scenes, being one of the first legislature to pass this, setting up the dispensaries, making sure that our patients are served across the state. There are dispensaries open on every island now, or in every county. So to make sure that that remains viable while having an adult use system is possible.
That's paramount, actually.
You know, clarify for us, because this whole thing with out-of-state patients getting the registration card and being able to buy here at the dispensaries, but they aren't really allowed to transport it from other islands, right?
No,
they're go back with it.
They, as the state law is written now, they are not really allowed to travel from Oahu to the Big Island if they want to go see the volcano with their medicine. There's the federal issue, but there's also the state law that would basically prohibit that. Is the TSA enforcing that? That's another matter. You'd have to ask them. And if you ask HPD, if they're stopped at Honolulu, or the sheriff's department, are they stopping passengers from traveling? No. Sometimes yes, sometimes not. I don't know. But federally, they can't bring it back to their
home
state.
Okay.
You know, the second point that he brought up with, you know, taxing, we all know the more you tax, the more you send you start an underground economy, a black market. So if you start taxing it too much, why should I do it up front? Let's do it on the side. And Colorado has seen a bit of that. I don't know if Washington has seen that yet, but Colorado, it's a problem that when I talk to my counterparts there, they say it's becoming a bigger an issue as time has gone by.
No, and I think to the chief's point, California, which is the most recent place to legalize on it, the largest state, they are experiencing that because they've found a couple of different issues. The tax rate might have been set at too high a level to contribute to the problem the chief was mentioning. And they also allow cities and counties to opt out. So that's creating kind of a dearth in the market for some places where there's a lot, and other places nothing, and it creates problems. So again, Hawaii has a very specific geography and a population that, you know, we need to discuss this and see what is the best way forward.
We do have a number of calls on the line. Let's go to Kona. Arnie, do you have a question or a comment?
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
What's on your mind?
So I'm very much in favor of legalization. I feel that Kona especially could really use the tax revenues. I'm a businessman here, and I'm going to be faced with two possible general excise tax rate increases, which is going to be a very onus on my business. And I know in other states the revenue has really helped our schools, and I know Kona schools could really use the money, as well as the other infrastructure. As far as the problems of social and all these other problems, you know, we just got to weigh the benefits versus the problems and the will of the people. I think it's overwhelming that people in Hawaii and for the whole nation want it to be legalized and find the whole criminal system, which was created, by the way, also by the Dow Chemical Company creating nylon and not wanting hemp to compete back in the 20s, besides the social issue of trying to target people of color for the use of marijuana. So, you know, it's all, you know, on every level, you know, it just seems pono to legalize it, take it out of the criminalization altogether, and reap the benefits of the taxes we could collect. And people were saying they didn't pass the legislation because it wouldn't have been fair to the medical marijuana community who have invested so much infrastructure. And to that, I said a simple solution would be give those medical marijuana dispensaries an exclusive on selling recreational pot for a few years. And someone could do the numbers and figure out what's a fair way to do it, and then later on let other people also deal with it.
Well, thanks for that, Arnie. Chris, I don't know. What do you think? I've heard that, as far as the dispensaries, that's where you are going to make your money down the road.
Yes. The Hawaii Dispensary Alliance's whole program has been about diversifying the market. It's been about creating a true, well-rounded and robust medical cannabis or adult-use cannabis industry, going all the way down to creating a cottage industry. We want a horizontal program. We want different licenses for growers, manufacturers, retailers, processors, and anyone to get involved. That's ultimately what's going to raise the bar for tax revenue. Right now, I'm sure everyone that's listening in saw the latest report, $12.6 million has been sold in medical cannabis, or was sold in 2018. That only breaks down to $175,000 in sales per month per open dispensary in 2018, which really isn't much. In the end, I think the state only raised about $600,000 in GE taxes from those sales, which pales in comparison to what could have been, what should have been created. We have a long way to go. We have a very long way to go until the dispensaries make any money, or until anyone in this industry makes money. Should those eight licensees be the only ones to play in the legal or legitimate market? Absolutely not. And there was a caveat carved into earlier legislation that allows the Department of Health to provide more licenses. They haven't done such. They need to. Let's consider that the state made about $400,000 in application fees in 2016 when the licenses were available. And since then, they've made about $600,000 in licensing fees since then. But they should have made significantly more, as well as more in GET, and we're way behind in that. Not like we're going to be able to pay for the rail. And again, the rail is a separate, it's a city function, not a state function, so those monies aren't available.
All right, we have another call from the Big Island. Brittany from Mountain View.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I just had a question. With the recent change that allows for reciprocity of medical patients coming from other states to now obtain a medical card in Hawaii and be able to access dispensaries. I'm wondering, now that tourists have essentially been given permission to participate in our medical program, where do they legally medicate? If edibles aren't available currently at dispensaries, all they can access is smokable products. They can't take them to their hotel. They can't go to the beach. Where do they participate legally so they don't end up getting in legal issues, problems?
Right. Don't get in trouble with the law. Uh-huh. Yes.
Yeah.
Good question.
Yeah.
And then, Carl, you have an answer for that?
Sure. I think the dispensaries, they definitely want to be able to sell edibles. The Department of Health has the authority under current law to introduce edibles, to create a system all on its own. We can also pass legislation. There are bills in the legislature that would make that happen. There's another bill that would create a study group to look at that. So, but yes, that issue is, it's a problem for Hawaii's patients. For the 24,000 plus individuals who are moving around, stuck in traffic, whatever, they need to be able to consume it in a non-smokable form, you know, when they're away from their home many, many hours a day. So that, but certainly for the tourists. And I think that the dispensaries have begun to address that. They're producing lotions and lozenges in larger amounts, the kind of things that the local tourists could use. I think that's kind of the way forward.
We've had some housing officials in studio, and I know there was a question about condo associations or townhome associations, and they're saying they're trying to regulate this based on noxious odors, I guess. So I don't know as far as like vaping and
vaping's a sensible option, sensible alternative. I think Carl spoke about a working group. There have been a number of working groups to try to get edibles available as a legal product in Hawaii since 2017, I think, is when you and I sat on the first one. I think what we found was that most condo associations or hotels have to provide a private place for smoking. If it's a no-smoking building or a no-smoking property, they have to provide a smoking option. And I think that's the best option that our tourists or visitors from out of state can utilize.
We're right back to that hypocrisy, though. Don't smoke tobacco, smoke marijuana. Does it? And I just came from Washington, D.C., and for the life of me, I couldn't figure out. I was smelling marijuana everywhere I went.
Totally legal in D.C.
Yeah, I know. I realize that, but I don't want to smell it. I had to smell it every step I took in Washington, D.C.
I have to laugh because I was in Seattle. The same thing. I was like, whoa. It's like wherever you go, you couldn't get away with it.
There are lots of smells we all object to, and I can respect that.
It's not as common as marijuana. Marijuana was a thing in D.C.
Carl and I have offices in Chinatown, and the odors that we smell in Chinatown, I'd much rather smell cannabis than some of the odors that are in Chinatown.
Gotcha.
Can I get back to the earlier caller's point about the impact on the communities of color? I understand what the chief said about not intentionally targeting certain communities, but it is a reality of who is being impacted. And the fact that it's currently criminalized means that you have contact with the criminal justice system, which can have a really negative impact on someone's public health. So we're trying to take people out of the criminal justice system into the public health system, both through the medical, but also if you legalize adult use, or at least decriminalize it, you would get down that path. So that's why we think the legalization initiatives in other states, they include what we call social justice components. Some of the tax revenue from those legalization efforts are going to reinvest in those communities that were impacted by these criminalization laws in the first place. And then also to make sure that those individuals who have a criminal record get that expunged for cannabis offenses, so they can become involved in the industry in the future and are not excluded because they were previously criminalized. That's the ultimate injustice.
Carl, I'd like to throw this to the chief. With respect to the diversion program, the harm reduction program that you guys were engaged in, can you shed some light on that?
What we're doing is we actually have met with the groups willing to participate in it, and I thought we had an understanding. We met with the courts. It's actually being held up by the prosecutors at this point. There's a difference of opinion that's really holding the program up, but we had a what we did was we were offering it to the first 50 people that qualified, and we were going to divert them into treatment programs or programs where they needed the help that they got. They would go through an assessment and have their records cleaned after a certain date. There's some hang-ups on that with the prosecutors, and it's just kind of stalled. But we'd really like to get into something like that. Again, though, I want to really emphasize, we don't target marijuana users. We really don't. It's a waste of our time to do something like that. And again, you know, we're not doing it because of who you are or what you are. If it happens, it happens, and it's not a priority for us. I've got much bigger things to do than go after marijuana users.
We understand, but there are still 1,000 individuals, including 400 juveniles per year, that are arrested and get that on their record. And the impact on that individual is extreme in terms of denials of student loans, possible job loss opportunities, housing. We understand that there's not an intentional targeting, but just the fact that it's criminalized has that effect. So that's why decriminalization is so important. And then adult use legalization is the conversation we've been having. But
you know, we recently had Mothers Against Drunk Driving here in our studios. Carol McNamee says that it's focused now on impaired driving, whether it be alcohol, prescription drugs, or marijuana.
MAD Hawaii put on a conference here in Honolulu, and it was called Drugs and Driving, A Call to Action. And we focused on younger drivers from the ages of 16 when they can first get their license up to about age 28. And that age group is overrepresented in statistics on drugs and driving and fatalities. So we're very concerned about that. It seems to be an increasing problem. And all different kinds of drugs, but for that age group, mostly marijuana and meth, and even cocaine, actually, affecting their driving, and then we see it in the statistics.
This is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. Push and push back. We're talking about efforts to legalize marijuana, why it's a good idea, why it's a bad idea. You can join the discussion by calling 1-877-941-3689. Stay with us. We'll be right back after a break.
We all know the downsides of being poor.
It's just overwhelming.
But what about the downside of being rich?
When you're really wealthy, everyone is out to get a piece of you. So it breeds a kind of suspicion. Why are you being nice to me? Are you just trying to get me to give you something?
The perils of having too little and too much. This week on Hidden Brain from NPR.
This evening at 7. Support for Hawaii Public Radio comes from the Hawaii Symphony Orchestra. Superhero soundtrack features the themes from The Avengers, Batman, The Incredibles, and more, 7:30 p.m. tomorrow at the Blaisdell. Tickets at hisymphony.org.
If you're just joining us, our guests in our studio are Carl Berquist, Executive Director of Drug Policy Forum of Hawaii, Christopher Garth, Executive Director of the Hawaii Dispensary Alliance, and HPD Deputy Chief John McCarthy. You know, we heard from MAD, and the concern, I think, is underage use of marijuana. I know the bill deals with recreational use for adults, right?
Sure. There is no push anywhere in the world, I believe, to make young people use cannabis in any form, except for medicinal purposes when it's necessary. In fact, I believe it's New Jersey. Actually, we talked about edibles earlier. They actually only allow edibles in their medical program for youth because it's a form of medicine that they can best consume depending on the condition. So really, you know, depending on the condition, the form is what's really key. If it's smoking for some people because they need instant relief, then edibles won't help them. So that we need to just be mindful of that. But in terms of the impaired driving issue, I think we all share that concern. And I think the chief can speak best to the prevalence of the problem. The issue is we don't want to come up with a system where someone is criminalized because they have the presence of something in their system when it's not an impairing factor. That's the problem. Right now, as the chief said earlier, you can detect cannabis in the system through a test, but it doesn't necessarily indicate impairment. So There are tests being looked at and things in other states that would test cognitive ability, and that could get someone who's driving while impaired, whether it's because they didn't sleep enough, whether they took a legal or illegal drug or whatever, they ate something terrible. You shouldn't be driving when your cognitive functions are not good. And there's actually, hopefully, within a few years, going to be an app even that's being produced with federal grant money to test people. Hey, are you really, should you really be driving right now? And if the reason is because they've had an edible or because they took some over-the-counter or prescription medicine, they shouldn't be driving. I think we can all agree on that.
Are oils available in the dispensaries now?
Oils yes. are available.
They are. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. We do have a call. Carter from Honolulu. What's your question?
Hi. So I just had a comment about the youth use. And I'm the 2018 International Prevention Specialist. And what I've seen, at least on Oahu and on Kauai, is that the dissemination of information, at least pertaining to cannabis, is pretty. It's a stretch to say that it's accurate, and it's either unwillingness or inability to disseminate anything like peer-reviewed literature. A lot of the things that are used against cannabis, at least in prevention, is really cherry-picked. And so what I've found is that a lot of our youth they don't have accurate facts. And we know that evidence-based prevention curricula, they work, and they work well. But it's difficult when we give them information that's just not accurate. And so I think I do think that it should be decriminalized. I do think that it should be legalized later or within time. But I think that as far as youth use, prevention is something that we need, but we need accurate prevention because right now the kids aren't getting it.
Thank you for that. You know, I was looking at some of the testimony that was submitted, and I saw a letter from a parent whose son was mentally ill and was taking marijuana, and she just basically said, yeah, that she's just lost her child to drugs.
Well, you know, I want to, with the vaping we talked about earlier, they mix marijuana derivatives into the vaping. We've had several incidents at school where the kid just basically fall on their head, slaps on a desk, they're going to the emergency room and they're diagnosed with what would generally be termed as a marijuana overdose. They hit something that was pretty high and it hit them pretty fast. So that was a result. Again, it's uncontrolled, and we really want to stay away from the youth. One of the best studies medically is that we know marijuana affects the youth when they're growing. It affects their brain.
The growing brain.
It affects their, they have problems if it's taken at that age. So it's a real danger. You know, we don't want to be creating a generation of zombies through marijuana use.
No, absolutely. I think we need to have this evidence-based approach that the caller referenced. Mm-hmm. And some of the information that the chief mentioned, that is true. It's true that certain individuals have a predisposition to maybe experiencing what this mother experienced, their child, losing their child, if that child has a predisposition to some kind of episode from cannabis. 10% of people can become addicted to cannabis, and the likelihood of that is probably greater now with the THC levels, the psychoactive component being greater. But again, that's a function of the black market, of the prohibition. So the idea is if we have regulation of it, we can address that. Combine regulation with a better educational approach to the youth to tell them what the chief just said. I have two daughters, 2 and 5. No way do I want them, unless they need it medically, and that's a totally different subject, to consume the kind of THC products that are available in adult use states. But that doesn't mean that we need to prohibit it with all those negative consequences and prohibit others who want to use it by free will. So we've got to kind of think on multiple tracks here and address the very valid concerns that the mother had and the chief just raised.
We have a call. Wendy from Honolulu. Do you have a question or a comment?
Yes, aloha. Hi. I'd like to I'm a cannabis nurse educator, and I'd like to share 3 of the pros and 2 of the cons that I see with legalization. First of all, as far as a pro, I see that people are getting off of other more harmful drugs, specifically alcohol and opiates. And so in the states that have legalized, they have seen a reduction in traffic deaths involving alcohol and opiates. And secondly, in states that have allowed legalization, like Colorado, they collected a lot of in tax money, and they gave a lot of that tax money, like $9 million, for medical research. So we have the first medical research going on to look for the potential medical benefits of it. Like in Arizona, Dr. Sue Sisley has conducted the first study on PTSD and cannabis. So I'm seeing a lot of potential benefits in terms of opening up research with legalization. I also share concerns about the effects that it's going to have on our current medical cannabis program, and also with overregulation, if the costs are too high, then the black market will continue to thrive, but we'll also exclude the people that we have, the local people, and the growers that we have, or people who've been criminalized, and they won't be involved in the program, you know, in the future. So I see a lot of benefit in having a task force, or you know, ongoing meetings between all of the parties that might be affected by this.
Thank you, Wendy, for that call. Chris,
I think Wendy's bringing up some great points, and what we all keep going back to is the need for more research and the need for greater regulation of a legalized product. Chief, you're on the same side of the conversation as Carl and I are. As we bring all of these pieces together, ultimately that creates more jobs, that creates more stability, that creates greater regulation, greater safety in product, safety on the streets. And Hawaii needs all of those components served via legalized cannabis. Looking at the numbers, we have an opportunity to create incredible jobs and diversity amongst those jobs. It's not only people growing and selling cannabis, but it's the revival of the blue-collar sector. It's technicians that are servicing these machines. It's people that are getting their hands dirty. It's people that are building these facilities. It's the white-collar that's also involved with the banking, with the legal structure of these companies, with the advertising of it all. It's people being able to afford homes again. People being involved in companies that are about to go public. How often does that happen in Hawaii? Not very often, but the grand opportunity is right around the corner. Again, with greater research, with more education, and a proper education campaign from maybe the Department of Health. Maybe Hawaii state government should be engaged more promoting medical cannabis as a viable alternative to opioids. They've been incredibly silent in promoting their own medical cannabis program. Yet we hear about Zika. We hear about rat lungworm. Rat lungworm doesn't impact nearly the number of people that the medical cannabis program does. And when we parlay that into an adult use program or legalize cannabis, the numbers are much bigger, much more important in the end, plain and simple.
There was a lot of discussion early on, a lot of hand-wringing about the banking side. Where are we at with that?
We're at the same place pretty much as previously. A couple of the states that have gone through legalization have managed to convince local credit unions to do banking for them. This is one of the issues regarding the black market. This is an issue for legal medical cannabis, legal adult use cannabis, and the black market. It's all in cash. This must create huge law enforcement problems. I'm sure the chief is hearing about that from his colleagues in other states. And it creates problems for the dispensaries here in terms of, you know, having a simple audit. How do you pay your employees? How do people actually themselves pay for their medicine? Do they have to bring cash? Right now they have an option to use some kind of app on their iPhone, but I've heard that only 10 to 15% use that. And I'm not going to expect my elderly relatives to whip out their iPhone and pay for their medical cannabis. But they might have a credit card, but they can't use that currently because of the banking issue. So that's certainly a huge problem. And I believe just today, Representative Tulsi Gabbard, or yesterday, introduced a bipartisan bill in Congress to begin to tackle that with Representative Young of Alaska to make sure that banks are sent a clear, unequivocal message that this is a legitimate industry. This is legal under state law, and you should be able to feel comfortable being involved in that. And the downside is all this cash floating around leading to possible crime.
Chief, you just came back from, you said, a conference in D.C. did this come up or no?
Well, we actually met with our congressional delegates there. We met with all four, and we did discuss it. It was all four island chiefs and some members of our federal partners. It's kind of interesting because that's the conflict between the federal and the state law, and that's what prohibits that. Tulsi Gabbard, when we met with her, she was very open, very good, and I think the Marijuana Data Collection Act that she's co-sponsored was a very key component to that. And that's the problem is, it's funny on that, is the pro-legalization people think the evidence will fall their way, the anti-legalization. And what we really need is evidence-based, independent study to show what is what and make a good decision. Anything less than that, to me, it's just an irresponsible decision. It's not going to benefit people. You hear so much anecdotal information or evidence on one side or the other, and it's not true. I mean, even the growth of the industry, the tax. Let's look to what's happened. You know, Hawaii is kind of in a good position. Yeah, we pioneered the medical marijuana, which was okay. I mean, for whatever reason, but legalization, other states have done it. Let's look to them and see what's happened. You know, we hear good and bad, but let's look at it independently. What is the real result of that? You know.
So, what is law enforcement's takeaway at the conference that you attended? You know, what's happening in some of these markets?
We just see more the negative. I mean, but we see more the negative mankind. Period. But there were a lot of things because we're looking. No matter what, if you pass the law to legalize it, that's all fine and good. Going back to impaired driving, how do we measure that impaired driving? There's no mechanism now. What dosage of marijuana makes you impaired? We can't, you know, even if we drew blood, what it doesn't make a difference. What there's no standard for that. How do we tell that? We have a drug recognition program. We can tell you're impaired. Earlier, it was brought up about people just being tired. We have laws, and we can take care of that as well. How do you tell the person who's on marijuana? The use of it is easier. And again, the method of ingestion has a factor in that. If I smoke it, I get it now. If I take an edible, it's 1 to 3 hours down the road. What else did I take with it? I saw one medical study that says if you're on certain medication and you take edibles, you can increase the effects of that marijuana fivefold. You don't know when it's coming. Is it an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours later? If you're staying home, it's all good. But if you're working, and there's another problem people might not realize, but we won't get police officers. If you're a marijuana user, you can't be a police officer. You can't carry a firearm. I wouldn't want anybody on marijuana carrying a firearm. Scary thought.
We have a call from Maui. You've been very patient, Mark. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I'm really disappointed in this legislation we just passed to decriminalize. Basically, 3 grams or less. Most people carry more than that on them. That's barely a joint. So basically what they're saying is if the police pass by you at the beach and they smell marijuana and they come to you and they find more, you know, that you're going to be charged criminally versus if you had less, a $200 ticket. So basically, I think what it is it's a mechanism to, generate revenue $100 at a time. And it's borderline extortion where the cop can say, look, unless you give me this weed and say okay to the $200 ticket, I'm going to impound your car and arrest you and take you to jail. I think it's wrong. And I think the people themselves can decriminalize this. It's real simple. The formula is real simple. If you're a juror and you're in court, don't convict. If it has anything to do with marijuana without violence, don't convict, and they'll stop abusing the power against people that use medicine.
Thanks so much for that.
The caller makes a good point. The public can do something about it. There is one route that hasn't been explored to get cannabis legalized, and that's to introduce a bill for a constitutional amendment so that the public can vote on it. No one's done that yet. Hasn't had a hearing.
Support is very high across Hawaii for that.
It's polling at over 80% on neighboring islands or neighboring counties and about 71% locally.
And even nationally, a majority of Republican registered voters are supportive of some kind of legalization. It's kind of a loose question. It depends on what kind you want. But there's a general support out there. And to the caller's point, I hope he comes to testify at the legislature when this bill goes into the Senate hearings, because he makes some very good points about how this is really a minimal minimal reform, and I think we can do better.
Okay. Yeah, we're just about out of time here.
Go ahead, Chief.
No, I was just saying, I hate to harp on the same point, but all these people that are in favor, is that an intelligent decision? Or, you know, are they informed? Or is it just, hey, I like it, it feels makes me feel good, let's do it.
Our caller from Honolulu certainly pointed out that there are some big, big pieces that are missing. Very educated about the point. But what I like to say, Chief, about things are illegal. We have an opportunity to make them legal. When it comes to a police officer using a firearm while under the influence of cannabis, nobody wants that. Nobody wants anyone going to work while they're high, while they've taken their medicine, or while they've recreated with cannabis. But there are laws to prevent that. There can be laws to prevent that. And it takes smart, critical laws to get us through this threshold onto a brighter horizon.
Thank you, Catherine, for letting us have this conversation.
Thank you
so
much. Thanks, guys.
And thank you, gentlemen, for being here. Thank you, Christopher Garth, Executive Director of the Hawaii Dispensary Alliance, HPD's Deputy Chief John McCarthy, and Carl Berquist, the Executive Director of Drug Policy Forum of Hawaii. And we thank you, the listener, for joining us on today's show. And if your call didn't make it on the air, call the talkback line and leave your comments. That number, 808-792-8217. Send us an email at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. And if you want to listen back to today's show, check out the Conversation podcast at hawaiipublicradio.org. I'm Catherine Cruz. Join us tomorrow for more of The Conversation.